What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner. Front and center this hour, another key week for stocks. Apple, Amazon reporting, and a Fed meeting. The investment committee sizing it all up for you. Joining me for the hour today, Joe Terranova, Anastasia Amoroso, and Jim Labenthal. We're all here at Post 9. Let's check the markets because stocks are higher for the fifth time in 6 days. Joe, we're coming off the best week since November. Doesn't really feel like it, though, does it? I mean, do you feel like sentiment has turned once again bullish?
No.
I'm not so sure.
No. Absolutely not. And I think a lot of it is because of the decline we had earlier in the month, down 5%, which I think was healthy. I think it's all about earnings. And look, so far, earnings are growing at about 4.7%. That's not really statistically dramatically above what the consensus was. It's somewhere around 3.6, 3.7. So it doesn't feel that way. I think this week is a big week just in terms of, can Amazon, and I think it's really Amazon, can Amazon extend the momentum from last week that was delivered from Alphabet and Meta?
Well, I mean, can Apple stop the momentum schneid? I mean, the stock's been on the schneid for a while. They're going to report too. We'll talk about that in a minute because there's news regarding it today. Anastasia, Fed meeting.
Yeah.
Maybe the risk is that, you know, more hawkish Fed chair, just given some of the most recent inflation reads, though. PCE, obviously, their most preferred read was certainly better than the most recent CPIs. Jobs report on Friday and then these critical earnings that Joe and I were just talking about. What do you think?
I think it's going to be really hard for Fed Chair Powell to sound hawkish, given what he's already said a couple of weeks ago, and also given what yields have done. I mean, the two-year Treasury is knocking on 5%, the 10-year Treasury at 4.6% or so. It's priced in a lot. It's priced in higher inflation expectations. It's priced out all but one rate cut for the remainder of the year. And by the way, I think it's only 125 basis points of rate cuts that are priced in for something like the next 5 years. So I think the market is already where the Fed wants it to be. So I think it's really going to be hard for the Fed to say something that's going to upset the apple cart here.
Yeah, that'll be interesting, Jimmy, what Powell actually says on Wednesday. We'll be following that. Of course, I'll have Gundlach with me after that. A lot of the commentary to my point to Joe that, yes, we're coming off the best week for stocks since November, doesn't really feel like it. Doesn't feel like the tide has now turned back to being in the bull's favor. Even if it has, it certainly doesn't sound like it. BTIG's Jonathan Krinsky writes, continues to look at these technicals and, you know, raises these flags, though, let's be honest. I mean, the technicians since the October bottom have been run over by the bull train. But he says that the S&P 500 into resistance now, the road gets tougher. RBC says sentiment still hasn't gotten hit hard enough. And JPM today is we remained concerned. I don't need to give you all the reasons why they're concerned. They're pretty obvious just relative to where inflation's been of late, that most recent GDP read, and on and on and on.
Yeah, so, you know, just synthesizing what all three of you have said so far, I think the positives and the negatives are in balance right now. What if I just said that we're at fair price? Think about the positives. Let's just go to the Fed. You were talking with Anastasia about this a second ago, Scott. Yeah, there's, you know, probably going to walk back rate cuts further into the future. But at the same time, there's probably going to be some talk about maybe quantitative tightening easing a little bit. So a positive and a negative. If I look at the overall fundamental picture for the economy, right, we've got good labor markets, so that's good. On the other hand, you know, consumer delinquencies kind of creeping up a little bit. That's a negative, but they're in balance. There's a tension between the two, which you're noting, Scott. But I think we can say that, you know, things are probably right where they should be, barring new news, which could be either positive or could be negative.
Well, you say that, but there are those who would suggest, well, the multiple of the market is not where it should be.
Okay.
That it's overvalued relative to where rates are, where growth may be going, and what the path for the Fed is now likely to be. You're suggestive of a more bullish scenario. Okay, we're at 5,100 on the S&P. You're at what some would suggest is an elevated multiple relative to the surroundings, if you will. How do you back that up?
Well, here's some. I'm glad you brought this up, because rattling around in my head as I was talking is the fact that our year-end target is 5,100 on the S&P 500. Where's the S&P right now? 5,100. You don't hear me like coming out and saying, hey, we're going to raise our target. What you do hear me saying, and this is where, Scott, I think you hear the bullishness in my tonality, is that underneath the hood, there are sectors of this market that do, to me, still look very attractive. They tend not to be technology, and let me be clear, folks, I'm not saying go sell your technology stocks. I'm saying they may be fairly priced. But underneath the hood, if you look at those financials, you know, a lot of them trading around 10 times earnings, good dividend yield, you know, maybe a little premium to book, or industrials, materials, energy, I still see a lot of value there.
All right, so Anastasia, Tony Pescarello, Goldman Sachs. Now, I've been highlighting his notes, which come around once a week at the end of the week. And he has been consistently bullish. I would suggest, you know, more bullish than others, and he's been correct. And he's also told you where to keep your eye on the ball. That's been his saying for the last many, many months in terms of large cap, specifically tech. He says today, and I feel like there's a modest tone change from Tony, I expect the S&P will continue to chop around in the next phase of the game, and the best money will be made at the single stock sector thematic levels of the stack. Within that, keep your eye on the ball of mega cap tech. Okay, that sounds consistent to where he's been. However, listen to this. There are times to go for the break. There are times to go for the gas. Superficially, my instinct is equity people should be tapping the brakes, while macro people should be pressing the gas. He's looking for volatility to pick up. Mm-hmm. He doesn't love the technical setup now. I'm not going to suggest that he's bearish, because he's not, and I don't want to misstate the tone of his note. But he does say the near-term backdrop could be more complicated.
Yeah. Look, I can see how I can agree to that sentiment, because, you know, I do like the growth backdrop and I like the earnings backdrop, and I think stocks can still do fine without the rate cuts. But there is this uncomfortable feeling that inflation is not decelerating as fast as it used to. And even if you look at the core PCE number, which came in right in line with expectations, if you look underneath the hood, the services excluding housing, it sort of stagnated and even picked up a little bit. If you look at the three-month pace of PCE, the core PCE, it's now outpacing the 6 months. So there is this discomfort that the Fed no longer has the confidence that this inflation is continuing. And at what point does the Fed say, in fact, we don't have the confidence and we may have to do something to restore it, i.e. by potentially hiking rates? So I'm not saying that's the base case, but that's the uncomfortableness that might be creeping into the market. And then to the technical backdrop, it has corrected. Scott, we talked about in the beginning of last week, you had a lot of those oversold technicals, which now have reversed. But the net length that we talked about last week as well is still very much there from the systematic community and hedge funds.
You want to dissect this Tony note? I mean, and let's be clear. He's head of hedge fund client coverage at Goldman Sachs. You know the kind of clients that Goldman Sachs has out of the hedge fund community. In other words, he talks to everybody that matters. Okay. So if he says that now is the time to go tap the brakes for equity people, what do you think that means in the greater context?
I think there's one word that stands out to me, and that's chop. And I think that's exactly what we could be in for here. 10 days ago, I said I thought we were bottoming. We were bottoming from a process of a healthy correction that I really think worked off positioning more than anything else, a real overbought positioning and sentiment. I think as you look forward now over the next several months, you've got strong gains so far year to date, not just in equities, but in equities beyond the U.S. I think you're going to see money managers be risk averse. I think risk averse is probably the right disposition to have over the next several months, because you're waiting on so much. You're waiting to see if you could have the sustainability of earnings as we've had in recent quarters. You're waiting on the Federal Reserve. You're waiting on a U.S. presidential election. You're waiting to see if recent data related to the economy is going to weaken further. And I think the right way to look at the market is from the perspective of, yes, we want to be risk averse. We'll find some opportunities here and there in single stocks. Goldman Sachs, I keep talking about Goldman Sachs breaking out. Maybe in healthcare, you could look at a name like Merck. That's working really well right now. But if you're a macro trader, probably the next couple of months are going to be favorable for you, because the market is going to move in that direction.
Okay. Now, with all due respect to Mr. Pescarello of Goldman Sachs, The note that really raised my eyebrows, to be honest with you, this weekend was one from Adam Parker of Trivariate. Enough so that I was like, you got to come on tomorrow and talk about this, because this is a bit of a change that I want our viewers to know about. Adam joins us now. All right. So it's good to have you back.
Yeah, good to see you.
Because you have made a bit of a pivot, if I can call it that. And I'm going to read the headline that I took from your note and we can discuss. Our recommendation had been that the bull case was far more probable than the bear case, driving our judgment that there was a material upside to the S&P 500. But now our view has changed. Okay, that got my attention. Why has it changed?
Well, the three pillars to the bull case were easy financial conditions, gross margins expanding, and a belief that earnings are going to grow. The three pushbacks we always worried about were kind of a tightening set of conditions, slowing consumer, and a China recovery that's pumped. So we try to mark to market our views. And I think what I wrote there is, look, I have no idea now if the next 10% moves up or down. It seems to me like 5,600 is about as likely as 4,600. So I think the way Jim framed it makes sense to me, kind of 50-50 chance we move in either direction. Why? One, the stagflation, like I wrote in my note, if stagflation were a stock, it would be up, right? The economy looked a little slower. We could get some cyclical pressure on inflation a little bit. Two, the consumer is definitely slowing, and you can see that through some of the corporate earnings and macro variables. And then third, we scoured every word of every earnings call transcript year to date for any mention of China, China growth, China demand, China initiatives, and it really hasn't picked up. And if I look at stuff like in the healthcare tools or other areas, I'm just not seeing any evidence of that. And I know a lot of investors I talk to, probably the same crowd or a lot of the same crowd that that Tony at Goldman talks to, I'm not, people think China could get better. And if that's what they're expecting and it doesn't, there could be disappointment. So I think the risk reward is more balanced. I guess that's my summary, Scott.
But superseding, most of that, it's not like all that much has changed. Now, maybe the stagflation word coming into the lexicon of late is a difference. But you have been telling me that one of the reasons you've been more bullish than most is because of margins.
Yeah.
And that was the greatest takeaway, that margins were going to stay strong and that was going to be able to carry equities higher, therefore justifying the multiple where we're currently trading. Are you suggestive that that could be changing as well?
So there's three reasons to believe margins. One are structural reasons. I think those are still in place. Two are AI. That's still going to happen. But the cyclical stuff like input costs from commodities, materials, that part may be a little bit different. I put in the note just a basic commodity index. We're up kind of 8-9% off lows. And so there may be a little bit less of a tailwind or, than maybe thought. So I could see somebody tweaking their cyclical assumptions on margins, particularly if inflation has a bit of an upturn. I mean, the correlation between forecasted margins and CPI is pretty high for all but the mega cap companies. So yeah, mark to market, I feel a little bit less good about cyclical benefits to gross margins in a 6-month view.
You also say that at some point we're likely to have a 15% or more sell-off in the S&P. Admittedly, though, you say we're not there yet. What gets us to that point? Is it, well, I'll let you answer. What gets us to that point?
I was just kind of saying, look, like if stagflation were, if it were a stock, like it's in the lexicon, as you just said, it's up off lows. If that starts being more in their everyday vernacular, that's an ugly word. Right. So is there a chance that we get in this summer, the economy looks like it's slowing, but we're getting a cyclical uptick in inflation? Maybe. And that's what would cause a big sell. I don't think we're there yet. I think it's just something that if I assigned a zero probability to 9 months ago, it's 20% or something. It's not zero. And I got to really watch that cocktail, because that's a cocktail with a hangover.
I mean, but some would say no matter what, look at PCE. Listen to the Fed, just because they're pushing off or out doesn't mean they're pushing away. We still expect the next move from the Fed to be a cut, correct?
I think so. I like frameworks, and I like people who are disciplined, and I can understand the frameworks, and I can understand, how, deviations can cause change. I don't really know what their framework is, to be honest with you. And I know that the people who follow them carefully have not been successful at forecasting their movements. So I can't really impregnate that into my view of the equity market. I got to take a step back and say, what do I think causes volatility into the corporate earnings, mm-hmm. what I think causes volatility in the multiples. And on the margin, I feel less good about it than I did at the beginning of the year. And I'm just trying to be intellectually honest, tracking stagflation, tracking the consumer, and tracking China. Those things look worse than they did a few months ago. There's no way I could keep intellectually honest about that. Underneath the hood, I think there are a ton of opportunities. I think dispersion's widening. I think there's, you know, kind of estimate achievability on margins will be a big issue. And so there's lots to do underneath the hood. But I think at the top market level, the risk reward's more balanced.
Well, on that note, I'll ask you one more question before I open it up to the group here. Under the hood, you also suggest that the engine of this market might be changing in terms of what you like best. Now, you were telling me and our viewers, you know, you're a regular on Closing Bell. So you were suggesting, hey, buy energy. We like energy before a lot of other people liked energy. Now energy has had this run, and you had always been with me as well, saying you want to be overweight tech, right? Even in a marketplace where tech is such a sizable part, you want to be overweight that. That's changing too. You say, we recommend that investors who are overweight technology and energy begin to reduce their exposure and add healthcare, consumer staples, and utilities. Now, I don't need to be a rocket scientist to say, okay, he wants me to get out of tech and energy and get more defensive in healthcare, staples, and utilities.
Yeah, I mean, what that chart you're referencing is literally what is the historical stagflation playbook. If you start believing stagflation grows more, the two worst performing sectors were energy and tech, and the best three were healthcare, staples, and utilities. So if that starts gaining traction from here, that's where you're going to be lightened. When I look at our sector recommendations, we have 28% of the bet in tech with tons of AI semis and software that's accelerating and the Mag 7. You still have to have that if you're going to try to beat the S&P. You know, energy's 4% or no, plus or minus the S&P. So it's obviously you can own seven times as much tech as energy. You know, so I still like those sectors, but I think you have to start trimming a couple percent and adding to healthcare and utilities if you start believing stagflation grows. So it was more a alerting people in advance about what the stagflation playbook would look like if it does start to gain incremental traction.
Adam, it's Joe. If you would, drill down on that a little bit further, specifically as it relates to semiconductors and the AI halo. What's your feeling there as you look forward over the next 6 months?
So May 22nd, that's the day you don't make any plans. That's when
Super Bowl.
NVIDIA.
Yeah, that's when NVIDIA reports. And I think the news is likely to be good, but everyone else thinks that too. So obviously, if I knew when they were going to tell us they were close to meeting demand or 3 months away from meeting demand, I would expect some sell-off. But, you know, that note we wrote a few months back, Joe, that I think you saw the NVIDIA God trade, I still think that's the case, right? Like, you're not God. You can't call the top and then the next trough and then ride at the next peak. You still want exposure to AI semis. Most of the companies are hyper-focused on how to implement and deploy it. So I still like that part a lot, and I expect this will be an overweight recommendation for a long time. Most of the guys who trade semis and the old kind of mafia from the last 25 years I hang out with, they're trying to figure out if it's time to rotate into the industrial semis. You saw some slightly better comments from Texas Instruments. You saw a little bit of back and forth between maybe negotiation, I guess, between ASML and Taiwan Semi. Ultimately, I think compute's going to grow well, and you're going to want exposure to somebody managing money to that theme.
Adam, I appreciate your time very much.
Yeah,
interesting.
Good to see all of you. What a good panel. I like the whole crew today.
Thank you, man. We'll see you soon.
Right,
that's Adam
care.
Parker, Trivariate, joining us. Guys, I do want to get to this Apple news today that I referenced at the top. We were going to talk about it. Why? Because this is a significant moment, I think, in the anthology of what's happened with this name. Tony Saccone of Bernstein, he upgraded Apple today. Now, okay, so an analyst upgrades Apple. You're like, oh, duh. Except for the fact that it was 6 years ago, that he last had a buy or an outperform on this stock. He upgraded it today to that from market perform. He downgraded it 6 years ago on February 2nd of 2018. Now he reiterates the price target of 195. It says buy the fear. He says Apple's prevailing weakness in China is more cyclical than structural, expectations are low entering the results. It's a seasonally strong trading period. And more importantly, Apple is less expensive than it appears. Our belief is that, like Buffett, investors should look to add to positions at the bottom of the stock's valuation range and trim at the top. Take this.
Interesting. I've always advocated that fundamentally this is the one company that just when you think you're seeing an inflection point in the fundamentals, they prove you wrong. And they either prove you wrong through their balance sheet, the utilization of the balance sheet, whether it's the dividend or the buyback, or it's something embedded in what is a remarkable customer base and the resiliency that's reflected there, obviously, in its products with the earnings. I can't come on air, okay, with a rebalance occurring tomorrow for the ETF and not acknowledge that there has been a dramatic deterioration just purely looking at price and momentum. Over the last 52 weeks, the stock is up 2.8%. The stock since November of 2021 is ultimately really nowhere. So if I'm guided by two metrics, the fundamentals and the technicals, it really comes down to weighing each of those. And in the near term, to me, the technicals don't look good. The fundamentals over the long term always tend to prove out, always tend to win out with Apple. So if you are more tactical in your nature, then you're going to look and lean towards the technicals. If you are more of a long-term investor, you're going to look towards the fundamentals. And the fundamentals, you can't bet against
them. Boy, lousy calendar for you. Right?
I mean, sure is.
Got to make this decision for the rebalance ahead of Thursday's earnings report. Good luck.
Yeah.
He's rules based.
Remember, the stock was like 165. OK, now it's like 175 because
nice little bounce the Sakanagi, last several days.
Yeah, the last few days. But also the fact that Sakanagi has upgraded the stock today. It's a 3% move. So it's a strong day, Jim.
Yeah, but I also think that the Tesla news is flowing through to Apple, because what's the Achilles heel for Apple right now? It's China. And Tesla, an American company, making some good inroads over the weekend with China. I think there's a halo effect there. Mad respect for Tony. I think we all have that. I disagree. As a portfolio manager, I'm not going to step in front of these earnings where I think...
You disagree with the upgrade?
I disagree with the timing of the upgrade. So specifically what he's saying is buy the fear. And I'm reading that as buy the fear in front of the earnings report. Tony, if I got that wrong, sorry, but I think that's what you're saying.
Well, I mean, he didn't say buy it before the earnings report. I think he just felt now was the time, buy the fear. There's a lot of fear in the stock,
both for fundamental and technical reasons. I'm being a critical reader, and that's what I'm reading into it. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But here's my point.
You're reading between the lines.
I do, as you know, Scott, I do want to add to it. I'm not going to do it in front of earnings because it seems to me the more likely scenario is I buy here. There's some bad China news that comes out and the stock comes down. If I'm wrong, okay, you know, look, I certainly wouldn't spike the football in Tony's face if I'm right. I don't think he'll spike the football in my face if I'm wrong. And maybe I'm buying it higher than here. I do think, to your point, Joe, I think long-term investors do want to add at this level. I can't bring myself to do it in front of this.
Maybe the most important part of his note is as it relates to China. And it's where he says cyclical, not structural.
Yes.
I think some would suggest, well, I don't know. You know, maybe it's turned from what we thought was cyclical to a structural issue due to competition, market share, and Huawei and things like that. They still get, 17%, 20%, maybe a little less of their revenues from China.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. This is the debate. Is it structural or is it cyclical? He's clearly saying cyclical. On Friday, I would have said, no way. This is absolutely secular. China does not want its citizens buying Apple phones. This Tesla news, which we'll get to, obviously.
We'll get to that right now when you finish your sentence.
Okay, but I mean, look, this is a positive sign for American businesses doing business in China.
Well, because
and I think it's spreading through.
Speaking of China and Tesla, you see the pictures of Musk. Right?
Right.
Musk's over there. And the stock's up today a lot, as you see there. The highs of the day for Tesla shares. Back up almost at $200. And that's after getting closer to, they say, to full self-driving in China. So Elon goes over there. By the way, Adam Jonas, you guys know him, Morgan Stanley. He put out a note a few minutes ago. Patty Martell sent to me right now. Thank you for that. He's back. That's the headline from the Jonas note. Why? It shows... the commitment is back. I think shareholders have been worrying, and Jonas mentions this in his note today of, is he really all in? Is he really all in? He's got X, he's got all this other stuff. Nope. He says that him being over in China says he is all in. interesting. Got that too.
Yeah.
This one.
Yes, we do. And remember, everything is rules-based, and has it done enough to restore itself in terms of momentum? Maybe, probably not. It has done a lot of work, that's for sure. I think when you look at both Apple and Tesla as an investor, you have to ask yourself the question, what do these individual stocks do for my portfolio over the next 6 months? If Tony Pasquarello, if Adam Parker are correct, what they see over the next 6 months, if it's a choppy environment, if maybe you want to be defensively oriented, then Apple's a great stock for you because Apple in its nature is defensively oriented. Is Tesla defensively oriented? I'm not so sure the answer to that is yes. So while the headlines are bringing this stock higher, I'm going to reiterate what I said last week when we had the conversation with Steve Weiss and Brin. I certainly wouldn't be short. I wouldn't be short Tesla, but I'm not necessarily sure you're going to get the Tesla that you had in 2021 over the next 6 to 12 months.
I mean, this
months.
Is yet another statement, sort of bet against this stock. Don't overstay your welcome, I think, is how I phrased it last week. If you want to be negative, fine. I mean, stock can obviously trade lower, but the snapback since earnings is pretty remarkable. We'll take a quick break. We come back, more calls of the day. We have trades on Uber and Lulu and Ulta. We're back in two.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
All right, we're back. Calls of the day time. We begin today with Lululemon. Let's take a look at shares. Stock got downgraded. Don't see that often. Downgraded to equal weight from over at Barclays. Price target cut to 395. That was from 546. That's an interesting move. Consumers, they say, are shifting spending away from athleisure. Does that mean they think that the pandemic bump in that area is finally over?
Potentially it is. I mean, let's look at that in terms of revenue growth over the last 3 years. The company's doing 30%. Over the last year, it's doing 18%. So you've got a moderation in the revenue growth for sure. The company stock, the stock is up 106% over the last 5 years.
Yeah, I
over
know, but the it's, last down, it's 3 years. Down 30% year to date.
Okay, so you got to where I was going. Over the last 3 years, it's up 8%. It's down year to date, as you cited, and over the last 12 months, it's down 5%. So clearly, you could call into question, is this a maturing company? The possibility there exists. I understand what Barclays is doing.
Okay. Again, rebalance is coming, so we shall see what happens on that front. I feel like I just need to remind people.
I thought we were going to escape that.
Of that. Okay. You're not. Okay. Because, the momentum.
Because you're here.
If you say the momentum is down 30% year to date, well, uh-huh. You could debate the quality metric that you right. have. We'll do that after you rebalance and see mm-hmm. where we land. As we will with Ulta, which was downgraded today, too, at Barclays. Yeah. Price target. This is another huge price target drop to 434 from 612. Competition heating up from brick and mortar.
Yeah, there's synergy in the exact content of each of these notes from Barclays surrounding these two consumer-facing companies. And again, let's start with revenue. Where are we over the last 3 years? 22% for Ulta. Where are we over the last year? And we're looking at only 6%. So you're seeing the deterioration there in terms of the revenue growth, and we're seeing the deterioration in terms of price. Stock's down 24%. Over the last 12 months. Stock over the last 3 years, up 23%. Again, a degree of maturity. is being called into question. I understand what Barclays is doing. And in terms of the ETF rebalancing tomorrow on the close, we'll figure out, okay, or the rules will figure out what we're
doing. I didn't even bring it up.
Okay.
Again.
Good.
Uber reiterated a buy today at Bank of America. I find one of the funniest lines in our Google Doc today is by way of Jim Labenthal.
Oh, God.
We're doing research on Uber? What do you mean? What kind of research are you doing on Uber? Let me help you out. Year to date, the stock's up more than 10%. In 1 year, it's up 120%. Company's profitable. A lot of love for it. Kind of proprietary research you got.
Oh, okay. Look, it's sometimes, look, we can all see that it's actually doing great as a company. You know, look, this comes under the heading of looking for an entry point, Scott. A little bit of a downtrend here. Don't want to wait too long. Obviously, everybody loves it and loves it for a reason. You know, just give me
some
time. Didn't
the robo-taxi sell-off give you that opportunity?
What is the robo-taxi? You're talking about Tesla or Uber?
Robo-taxi sell-off last week from Tesla.
When they announced the robo-taxi.
Yeah. Well, Uber sold off on that.
Look, I think that the robo-taxi, I'm glad you brought this up because it pertains more to Tesla. I think that's a huge canard in many regards. First off, many companies have been trying for the robo-taxi. Certainly Google's out there, GM. It ain't easy, folks. And, you know, I love this fact that with Tesla, Elon says it and the stock goes up. Let's see how that actually comes to fruition.
That's why you buy the sell-off on Uber.
Okay.
But that's what I'm you know, I'm only kidding with you.
That's fine.
You really mean you're looking for an entry point. You're not, what kind of research? I mean, what more to the story do you need to know?
Look,
I guess what I'm asking you,
okay,
if you're looking to be bullish on the name.
Yeah. As I said, I mean, there's a reason why we're looking at it. There's a reason why everybody loves it. It's doing quite well. And it's a question of where do you buy it? I mean, you're usually good with the numbers. What is it up so far this year?
It's up 10.5%.
Okay, well, it's had
I'm not arguing for you, by the way. I'm not advocating for you to buy the stock or not. I just thought it was funny that
you're doing
research on it.
I've got a team of analysts. They research. They make recommendations. I and other portfolio managers of the firm make decisions whether to buy or sell.
Dominant position in mobility, dominant position in delivery,
yep.
$7 billion share buyback last year. A company is really in a position that's unique relative to the rest of its peers.
I just wanted to see if you had like some, you know, channel checks. You got drones going around.
I hope I'm being clear that the stock has had a marvelous run, 10% year to date. I mean, I'm looking at it right now.
I think he's just going to various points of Manhattan and calling Ubers and seeing.
Yeah, just seeing what happens. How long did it take?
You can look at real time data though, and you know, see
how many Lyft placards versus Uber placards. You got people on this.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get the headlines with Seema Modi. Hi, Seema.
Hey, Scott. In an unannounced visit to Kyiv today, NATO Secretary Jan Stoltenberg told Ukrainians that NATO members have failed to deliver on promises of military aid in recent months, but said the flows of weapons and ammunition will now increase. Stoltenberg met with President Zelensky and addressed the Ukrainian parliament. U.S. regulators, meantime, are investigating Ford's hands-free driving system following recent crashes that killed three people. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration said the crashes involving the Mustang Mach-E SUVs had a driver assistance system called Blue Cruise engaged. The probe covers about 130,000 of the vehicles from 2021 to 2024. Ford telling Forbes it's working with investigators to support the investigation. And students at Columbia got an ultimatum from the Ivy League school today. Leave the protest encampment by 2 p.m. or face suspension. In a notice sent to the students, the university said that students would not be punished for their participation if they signed a form promising not to break any more rules until the end of the next academic year. Scott, that's the latest. Back to you.
All right, Seema, I appreciate that. Seema Modi. Up next, protecting your portfolio. New funds that are designed now to defend against a downturn. That is coming up in today's ETF Edge. We are back right after this.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Let's get to Bob Pisani now with today's ETF Edge. Hey, Bob.
Oh, Scotty, can ETFs protect against the drop in the stock market? The volatile markets combined with a larger cohort of older investors has created a demand for products that allow investors to still stay invested but provide some protection on the downside. This Wednesday, Calamos will launch a product that seeks to match the price return of the S&P 500 up to a cap of 9.2 to 9.6%, but also provide 100% protection on the downside. How are they going to pull this off? Let's talk with the guy who's doing it, Matt Kaufman. He's the head of ETFs over at Calamos. So, Matt, you're launching this structured alt protection product for the S&P. Is that what you call it? This Wednesday. How are you accomplishing this downside protection?
Yeah, thanks, Bob. So these are called Calamos Structured Protection ETFs. They're designed to deliver 100% downside protection over a one-year outcome period. But then the upside relative to a market, the S&P 500 launching this Wednesday, ticker CPSM. And then in June, we have another one on the NASDAQ 100. And we're also on file for the Russell 2000 set to launch in July.
How do these work?
So very simply, these are a package of options positions, all customized to expire on the same day, 1 year from now, that can deliver the upside, again, to a cap. There's no free lunch here. So a cap of right around 9.65% is what we're seeing now, with 100% protection over the next 365
days. So you're buying some combination of puts and calls that enable you to have this kind of downside protection, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So it seems to me that the challenge is that whoever's purchasing this ETF has to understand there's a very specific day that you really should buy and sell on. Otherwise, the whole proposition becomes a little dicey, right? Explain why that's important,
sure.
Getting in at the right moment.
Yeah, just like, you know, most capital protected products outside of the ETFs, they're designed to be delivered over an outcome period. So the earlier you get into the first day, you know, day one, the better. You're going to get close to that 100% protection. There's going to be some time to get in along the way, opportunities along the way, too.
So these, you call them structured protection products. They're
correct.
Part of a much larger group. We've been talking about this on ETF Edge for over a year. They try to provide some downside protection while still staying in the market. So we've talked about JP Morgan's premium income fund, JEPI. That was a huge seller last year. They sell options to generate income. And then we also have these buffered products out there that deliver partial protection against the downside. And now you have one that has 100% you're offering. What's
sure.
the appeal of all these products? Who are you selling these to and who's buying them?
Yeah, a couple points of differentiation. These do not use equity-linked notes. These are all flex options, options that are exchange-traded. And then if you look at lower rate environments that we've been in for the last 15 years, that's when buffer ETFs did very well. Those products are great. They work very well. As we enter into a higher rate regime, we can now deliver capital protection over an outcome period.
It seems though, older people like me who want to stay in the market but want protection, that's the natural buyer of these products, right?
I think it's one of the buyers. I think there's cash on the sidelines. It gives you an opportunity to earn greater than the risk-free rate. Retirees needing to provide for themselves. Those are all great opportunities.
And you mentioned you've got other products coming up very soon here. I want to go into them on ETF Edge, but we're going to have a lot more about how to use these new suite of ETFs that allow you to stay in the market, but also provide downside protection. There's a whole suite of them coming up. We're going to have them on ETF Edge. That's 1:10 p.m. Eastern Time. Matt's going to be joined by Todd Sohn from Strategus. ETFEdge.cnbc.com. Scott, back to you.
All right, Bob. Appreciate that. Bob Pisani coming up. We got set up on a few key names reporting earnings in the next 24 hours. We're back right after this. It is time for the setup on some key earnings. All right, Transocean.
Yeah.
That's today after the bell. Jimmy, you own that.
Yeah, I really do like the setup here. I'm not all that interested in what the reported results are. I am very interested in the commentary about how tight this market is for deep water drilling rigs. About a month ago, we got news that one of their rigs was contracted at $500,000 a day, which is a very high rate. And if that continues, you'd like to hear the CEO say that some of these idled rigs, they've got 11 cold stacked rigs. You'd like to hear that some of them are going to be reactive. I think that's a matter of when, not if, but we'd like to hear some commentary on
it. You want to give me what you want to hear in terms of commentary on NXP, which is also today after the bell. I'm going to give Joe another break because the rebalance, but you own this too.
Yeah, this is, from a fundamental point of view, not a slam dunk. I do think there is potential bad news baked in here. What is that bad news? We know that the electric vehicle market is soft right now. There's a lot more chips that go into electric vehicles versus internal combustion engine vehicles. We also know that internal combustion combustion engine vehicles are doing very well. So it's a question of what's that trade-off? Do they have enough pickup in the internal combustion engine business to offset the weakness in EVs? I think they will, and I also think at this valuation and looking at the revisions of earnings, that there's room to be surprised on the upside, but it's not a slam dunk.
Let me just quickly say, automotive is 55% of revenue, and what did Texas Instruments tell everyone last week about the auto demand? So be careful extrapolating too much, and I'm not saying you are, too much negativity surrounding this report.
What do you think of the chips?
I think chips broadly are must-haves in client portfolios, and I say that because all these trends that we're talking about, from electric vehicles to artificial intelligence to data centers and more, all of them function only because of chips. And so when I look at the industry revenues today, which is about $500 billion, that is likely to go to $1 trillion by 2030. So it is a massive mega trend, and that's why I look through all this, you know, any sort of pullbacks, and I want to buy that. But to go back to kind of Jim's point, the other reason why I really like semis right now is because I think there's a cyclical story to be had as well. You know, after inventory destocking, we've piled up a bunch of semiconductor inventory, and that weighed on a lot of chips and smartphone sectors and automotive and industrial, but we're slowly but surely working that inventory levels down. And by the way, Scott, the demand for chips is typically very correlated with the manufacturing indices. So this week on Wednesday, we get the manufacturing PMIs, ISM numbers. If they could continue to support the manufacturing uptick story, which I think they will, that's good for chips demand.
All right. We are going to take another quick break. I should note as well, we're at the highs of the day for stocks right now. The Dow's up about 124. S&P at 5116. That's near 17 points. There you go. We're back after this with Mike Santoli and his Midday Word. Welcome back. Our senior markets commentator, Mike Santoli, is here at Post 9 for his Midday Word. All right, new week and a big one at that. Earnings, Fed, jobs. What's on your mind?
Yeah, last week stabilized things. I think that was the key thing. It was after three straight down and, you know, you had a little bit of an oversold, you know, makings of a bounce. You got the bounce. It responded to that. You got also through, I think, what's obviously we have a lot of big earnings to come, but you got through enough that I think the current forward estimates look like that they are substantiated at this point. So I think all that's pretty good. I think tactically, you know, the market's still trying to fight its way back into the early April range. That's where we sit right now. You're playing around on the S&P 500 with the 50-day average. So it's fair to say, you know, you've kind of set this bit of a trading range floor, if nothing else. I think the question is, can you make your peace with where rates are, what the Fed's going to say? I mean, historically, 4.5%, 5% Treasury yield is not kryptonite for stocks. Inflation near 3% is fine for stocks and for the economy in the right conditions. The question is, can we find the right valuation in all that mix to get there and also have some kind of faith of where we're headed as opposed to getting a hike? You know, the inverted yield curve is still the market's way of saying the next move should be down, and maybe depending on the probabilities of where they lie, it should be relatively soon, but we'll see.
That's probably why, and we highlighted this at the top of the program today, why there are many who are still afraid to sound, you know, or say all clear.
Sure.
And that's the majority of the notes today are still cautious, negative, sell-off still coming, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that, you know, a 3% bounce off a low is going to be enough. But, you know, that seems fine. I think people have last summer's experience a little bit fresh in mind, where you had exactly the same 5% pullback in August. You got a bounce of the 50-day.
That was JPM
basically
today.
Basically failed.
Right.
Did they say that?
They said exactly that. They're worried that you're going to have a replay of last summer.
Lift. Now, I think you had a lot of things you didn't have that you do have now, which is a Fed that is looking for the opportunity to pivot and an economy that's proven even a little more that it's resilient.
All right, good stuff. I'll see you on the bell. That's Mike Santoli, our senior markets commentator. We'll do finals next. Going to take you through the final stretch of trading today with Dan Greenhouse, Shannon Sekosha, Lo Tony, and Jeff DeGraff. He's great on the technicals, so you want to catch that at 3 o'clock. I hope you will. Let's do final trades. Anastasia, it's been great having you. What's your final trade for us today?
Consumer discretionary ETF. I actually see real-time data tell us that consumer spending is picking up, and they're spending on services, travel, and e-commerce, and all of that is in this ETF.
Have you seen those TSA read-through numbers, pass-through numbers? Those are incredible.
I imagine they are.
Ask Jim. He'll tell you about it one day. Jim, what's your final?
Are in this as well.
What's your final, Farmer
Delta
Jim?
Delta Airlines. I got filibustered on Friday. I was going to do it then, but Weiss talked over me. So here we go now. Delta. Beautiful chart, by the way. And the fundamentals look great.
All right. Good stuff, Joe.
Jimmy almost filibustered over me. I've been long J.P. Morgan since March of 2023. I think there's another 15 to 20% still in the stock.
Okay. Thank you for that.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.